Toronto.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
You're the only one on.
Okay, well, I just had unexpected company come through the door, but it's my
I
little teacher
understand.
friend, and her pencil sharpener is stuck, so she's got Tony fixing it, but caused me to be late.
Well, it's only a couple of minutes, so it's not a problem, but I just wanted to
Okay.
let you know you're the only one.
Okay.
So I take it we're gonna, I mean, I don't mind going forward with you, but do you want to wait or do you want to go forward?
Well, I think maybe I'd rather wait.
Okay.
If that's somebody else, well, I'll stay.
Yes, Judy.
Okay, Judy.
It is somebody else. We're
Good
going to go
evening.
forward. Good
Okay.
evening,
We'll
Judy.
move forward. Okay.
All right. So we're tonight's class is a deep Zohar class on the Parashah of Noach. We're in section 25, and we're going to be starting with verse or Pasuk 190. And I'll start with the Lashem Yehud. Lashem Yehud Kut Shabri Fu Lishkin Tehid Hilu Urkimu Hilu Hilu Urkimu Liakta Lashem Yud He Bavahe Biyehuda Shalim Bishem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La Sok Torah Mitzvah Vayehinu Amadunai Elohinu Alena Maaseya Adenu Kunane Alena Maaseya Adenu Kunanehu Rabbi Yitzhak Amar Kol zina dechayave alma askiu zaka'a deish tekach beinaihu hu idpas bekad meta diti vumi mikdashei tachelu betaninan Al tikre mi mikdashe, yela min kudashi, benoach es shaziv, leya kudshabrifu, bein kol inun chayavaya, ela begin deivkun, Minea toladin, be alma de hawa, sadik kidka, yaot. Rabbi Yitzhak said, as long as the wicked multiply in the world, when a righteous person is found among them, he is punished first. As it is written, and begin at my sanctuary. And we have learned to read this not as mimikdashi at my sanctuary, but rather as mimkudashai from my holy ones. And this being the case, how did the Holy One, blessed be He, save Noah, who was righteous among the wicked? And he answers, He was saved so that he could bring further generations into the world. For he was truly righteous and fit to beget proper children. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, what stood out the most to me was saying that as the wicked multiply, when a righteous person is found among them, he is punished first. I think we've been taught that the more knowledge you have, the more accountable you are, and that that's what I think of when I see he is punished first. But I think what we've learned from Noah is the idea that the righteous person should be petitioning Hashem for mercy for the people of that generation.
The the verse is really leaving a very important, discussing a very important subject. Because we constantly have this discussion, how can bad things happen to good people? And we would all agree that a righteous person is good. And the Torah tells us that Noah is good. So why didn't the flood wait until Noah passed away? He already had his three children. He could have put the three children into the ark or into some form of protection. And you are right in saying what you said, Hannah. But what we're not realizing, what the sages have said without studying the Zohar, those sages who doesn't say it, they justify bad things happening to good people by saying that the righteous are judged with a finer comb. They're judged with a scale that is more severe. So the perfect example is Moshe. Moshe was told to speak to the rock, and he hit the rock twice. And for that, his favorite, his most intense desire was stopped, which was to come into the land of Israel. That's the example, one of many examples, that the sages use who never studied the Zohar. But now the Zohar is explaining a whole different idea. They're saying that the righteous, because they are righteous, they are willing to receive pain, suffering, and chaos in order to share so that the generation that they are in does not receive this pain, this suffering, or this chaos. The consciousness of sin. Go ahead, Hannah.
Okay, is that what we say when we say that that person is suffering for the generation?
That is what we're saying, yes.
In other words, it's not chaos.
Generation, so the generation doesn't have to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's the same idea of whenever there's a rainbow in the sky over a city that just was rained in, and everybody tells us how beautiful that rainbow is. The point is, those people who see the rainbow, they need to do teshuvah. Because the rainbow is saying there is so much chaos that needs to happen in this area where the rainbow is. So because of all that chaos that should happen, if the people don't do teshuvah, then the righteous people who did see that rainbow are going to suffer with a tremendous amount of chaos for the whole area, for the whole generation in that area. It's a very important concept. Now, the other side of that...
Oh, excuse me, Austin.
The other side of that is someone who is righteous I'm sorry, the fire alarm is off and I can't turn the noise off. So I'm gonna talk closer to the microphone and I hope you can hear me.
Emergency has been reported in this building. Please cease operations and leave the building utilizing the nearest exit or fire exit stairway. Do not use elevators. Repeat, do not use elevators.
Just Just for the record, we are also told not to leave the building, and we're behind a two-hour fire door. We're told that if there truly is a fire and it's not a false alarm, the door will hold the fire back, and the firemen will come and evacuate us one by one. So, what we were talking about, the generation, oh good, they turned off the noise, but not the alarm, not the light.
Okay.
You have a person who pretends they're righteous. Maybe they are righteous, but you don't really know because you don't see them behind closed doors. You don't see how they treat their family. You don't see how they are involved with other people other than you. So to you, they may be righteous, but they could be causing great harm to someone else. But those people say they're righteous. And all of a sudden, they have something bad happens to them. Do you know that they're being punished? They're receiving the chaos into their life because they're the righteous in the generation? Or are they receiving the chaos because of their own actions? So the point is that the way this part of the system works is you can never know.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are psychic enough to feel the pain that they feel and understand why they're receiving it. Because the teachings of the Zohar and the Kabbalah is everything that happens to a person, they are the cause. So why would this righteous person be receiving chaos in his life? And the answer is because he is part of the generation, and the generation has to receive this chaos. And this causes people to lose faith. This causes people to let their guards down and to bother to consider and lose their certainty. And that's why it's really important that you recognize that if the person is righteous, their illnesses, their pain, their suffering, their chaos, their loss of financial support, whatever it is, that chaos does belong to them because they are accepting it upon themselves for the generation. And you can never really know.
Okay.
So learning to maintain your certainty is really important, and especially with this information, you have to be careful of it. Go ahead, Chana. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I keep thinking you're finished, and I'm thinking of, let's say, in a previous lifetime, in a previous reincarnation. When you were before the heavenly court and it was being decided that you were going to be sent back, would you have been told that you were going to suffer for the generation, or ask you if you were willing to suffer for the generation for a particular, I don't know, what would we say, some particular...
Yes.
Okay.
The righteous people at their Bet Din from their previous incarnation, they're righteous at that point. They've received the accolades. They've received their Bet Din, and they know where their place in the Garden of Eden is and where in the hierarchy of righteous people they are. and they will remain. But they do. Every person sees, before they come down into the body, they see what's going to happen in that lifetime. They see whether they're going to remain righteous or they'll lose it. They see whether they're going to grow into greater righteousness or not. So they do have a choice. A righteous person, like a woman, has the choice. But there's another idea. They weren't fully righteous in their last lifetime, but they became righteous in this lifetime. And the generation should have the chaos because the generation isn't doing the proper work. So in that case, they saw the lifetime, but they were never shown that they are going to need to accept the chaos for the generation. Or maybe they are. Maybe they were before they came down. They were shown that. We don't know at this point. Nothing we've learned has prepared us for that. But you have to also have the certainty that Hashem is going to provide. So would Hashem create chaos on a righteous person, even if that person became righteous in this lifetime? He'd still give that soul the opportunity to say, do you want to accept this pain and suffering and chaos, or do you not? Because Hashem is merciful. Should I go forward or?
Well, I had a thought, but I'm trying to think of how to say it.
Okay.
You know, to me, just knowing that you went before the heavenly court and you were shown what you were about to experience in this next lifetime, and you know that. Even if you have no memory of it, naturally. But just knowing that, I think you reach a point where that actually increases your certainty because you know that it was shown to you and you agreed to it.
Correct.
To me, it kind of helps your certainty. You know,
yes.
And you know that whatever it is, that it'll be for the good, you know. I mean, I think of
you're accepting the certainty. You're expanding your certainty.
Right.
But I was referring to the others who say, what's the benefit in studying Torah if you're going to end up with this kind of chaos?
Well, I keep thinking of how Hashem had to start with destruction before he could create.
Before the earth, even.
I mean, it's like before you can have something new, you have to have experienced something having been destroyed.
Correct. You have to destroy the old before you can have something new.
Right. And I think once you kind of begin to see that really, I think it helps you. I think it helps you mature.
I agree with you, but I was referring to the other people,
right,
who see this righteous man studying the Torah 16 hours a day and having all of this pain and suffering and chaos, and then they look at him and say, well, you know, it's like the story of Rabbi Akiva. The Romans sentenced him to death by having his skin pulled off by metal combs, a very painful process. Now, because of his righteousness, he did not feel that pain. It was the illusion. So up comes a student, sees this illusion, and says to Rebbe, this is the reward for studying Torah? And Rabbi Akiva's answer was, get away from me, steak. They're making an announcement that it was a false alarm.
Okay.
So, but the point is that Rabbi Akiva's response was, get away from me, snake. Here's his student. Why would he call his student a snake? It's that we have to realize that he was presented with a test. He was presented with a tool of this negative system to see if his certainty would fall or not when he was receiving this pain. And that is exactly what you're talking about. He grew in stature, and he grew in certainty. But the student who was being controlled by the snake, he lost certainty because he was not willing to see through the illusion. So we see how the same action, the same situation, can be misinterpreted very easily. Mm-hmm. We will, it's only 6 minutes left before we'd be over, so I'm not going to go forward with the next verse.
Okay.
Judy, did you have anything you wanted to say?
No, she pretty much asked the questions, and I kind of understood what y'all were talking about, so I pretty much got it.
I think Ruby came on, too. I thought I heard Ruby.
Yeah, I am. I wanted to ask, I think I read somewhere that female souls don't reincarnate.
They have the choice to reincarnate or not.
Okay.
Well, obviously, they do reincarnate because there are women in the world. But they have the choice to come down or not. Because when they leave one lifetime, they experience a total cleansing and a return to the Garden of Eden, totally cleansed of everything in Gehinnom. Then they're presented their soulmate who has no choice. He needs to come down to complete his work. They're presented with the idea of you can take part of his tikkun, but it's never equal. The woman is always higher spiritually. But she takes enough of his tikkun so that if they were to meet in this lifetime, there would be some affinity between them. Because if she came down totally righteous, and he came down with all of his negative actions that have to be cleansed, there'd be no affinity. They'd never talk to each other. But so a woman says, yes, I'm willing to come down. And she takes on approximately half of the tikkun. But it's not really her tikkun. It's his tikkun. And that's where you get, as an example, you have a woman who is accepted to be beaten by her husband. Now, they're not soulmates, because no one who would beat his wife is going, that's not his soulmate. But she accepts that as part, as the cleansing of the tikkun from her soulmate. Because her soulmate has this problem, this tikkun with that man. So her soulmate needs to be beaten, and she accepts that. And that explains why women don't want to leave these abusive husbands, because their tikkun is not over. The cleansing isn't complete. And people don't really understand that, and it doesn't seem fair. And as I'm saying it, I know it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the one soul has the tikkun. That one soul, the male and female half, have split what they will, how they will correct what needs to be corrected. And it applies on a lesser level to marriages that are not proper, that are not complete, that are not happy. Because the male soul has a tikkun with that husband, and she has accepted that's her share of the tikkun that they have to complete. And again, it doesn't seem fair. But you have to understand the tikkun is shared by male and female. Yes, she doesn't have to come down, but it just lengthens the process if she doesn't. There's less children that get born into the world. There's more tikkun that he has to complete, and he wouldn't complete it in the one lifetime. He'd have to come down a second time. So women, understanding this, most women do come down. But that is why when they do the populations, they count the number of babies that are born in a year, and they see that there are slightly more men, male babies, than women babies. It's not a big percentage. It's not even 1%. It's not even 51-49. It's 50.1 versus 49.9. Now, I'm making up these statistics just to give you the understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
okay.
There's no way that a male comes down without having a female soulmate, a cosmic level female soulmate. But if she chooses not to come down, that's what happens. Aaron, who did make the mistake of building the golden calf, his real soulmate did not come down that lifetime. Now he married to Beth, to not Bathsheba, but Evisheva. I forget. Elisheva. He married Elisheva. Now, why did Elisheva marry to him when it wasn't her soulmate? Because her soulmate wasn't even close in this generation to completing the tikkun. And every woman who does come down is promised a happy, righteous marriage to experience it. Well, how can that be when I just described an abusive husband? And the answer is, she's promised a happy marriage, but not necessarily in that lifetime. She may need to experience the abuse to cleanse their joint tikkun, but when she comes down another time, she will be given that happy marriage. So, nobody's speaking. Did I clarify it? Did I confuse?
No.
Now, what about the women who killed his husband? Is that part of their tikkun as well?
What about the person who killed their husband? Yes, that's part of their tikkun. Does that mean that her husband will have to be killed by the husband? You know, it depends on the circumstances. It depends on where they are in their process. You know, we just don't see everything. But when you asked if she kills her husband because of his abuse, is that a tikkun? And the answer is yes. But you don't know if the tikkun has ended with that or just been added to. Is the negativity been added to? Because you don't know what's going on with between the various souls involved. Any other questions?
I think not. That was good. Very interesting.
I'm glad you found it interesting.
Yeah.
I think that the thought of the abuse I may have given some, not my wife, but you know, the pain that I've caused in other people. Have I added to my tikkun or not? You just never know. So the 7 o'clock class, which is 9 in Louisiana and Texas, that class is going to be a continuation of Rabbi Ashlag's essays. And then tomorrow morning, we will continue our Tanit Dibur. So I wish you all Shabbat Shalom this evening. Have a beautiful evening and contemplate what we've said.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom.